This is Geek News Central. My name is Todd Cochran, and stories that lead today's show are The Hazards of Autopilot, It's Prenda Reckoning Day, Inside Leaked Sources, The FCC Has Made a Landmark Decision for the Hearing Impaired, and Tim Cook, an open letter to his Apple employees on desktops. I want to welcome you all to episode 1167 of the Geek News Central podcast. Today is Monday, December 19th. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com, and listeners just like you, great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. You can support this show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider or paypal.me/geeknews. You can always pick up Ohana gear at cafepress.com/Ohana store. Everyone, I want to welcome you to the show. Of course, I want to welcome all the longtime listeners and viewers of the show, those of you that are part of the Ohana. If you're brand new to the show, I want to give you a very, very warm welcome as well. We want you to take time, really, and get connected with us. And to do so, all you really have to do is go over to geeknewscentral.com, visit the website, and when you do that, you're going to find a place there to subscribe to the show via iTunes, on Android, via email, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, via standard RSS feed, and any kind of podcatcher left in existence. And, of course, there's a standard RSS feed that you can grab as well. But the main thing is to get subscribed. If you don't know what I'm talking about, click on the more subscribe options. That'll give you information on really how to get connected and how to stay connected to the show and subscribe. And of course, if you visit Geek News Central daily, we got lots of great new content being put up on a almost daily basis. If you have comments on today's show, all you need to do is email me here, geeknews@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @geeknews. Of course, you can join our Slack channel. Drop me an email. Say, hey, I want to be part of the Slack channel to chit-chat with the Ohana. You can follow on Google Plus, on Facebook, just by searching for my name, Todd Cochran. Watch the show on the Roku, Apple TV. Of course, on the Roku, all you got to do is load the Tech Podcast channel in your Roku, and then you'll be able to listen to the show. Run under the news section of the app. You can listen on the Amazon Echo by telling Alexa to play the latest edition of this show's name. You can listen on Stitcher, you can watch or listen on Blueberry.com. Of course, our partner shows include No Better Than Average with Jacob and Jeff. We've got Health Tech Weekly with Mr. Jamie Davis. We've got The Gadget Professor with Mr. Don Bain, who I was on the phone quite a little bit with today. And the Pro Gear site was written and taken care of by our writing team at Geek News Central. Of course, this show is sponsored in part by our good friends over at GoDaddy.com. And really, those deals continue. And all you really need to do to score those deals is go over to geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Oops, there it went. And there's a code there for every occasion, whether it be 30% off new product purchases, a 99cent.com, whether it be $1 a month economy hosting with a free domain name, whether it be $1 a month managed WordPress hosting for the first year with a free domain. Both those hosting accounts that are $1 a month are first year offers. And, of course, all my codes start with CJC and then end with GNC. And whether it be WordPress 1, 1HS, FREE, GNC 99, GNC 30, all easy codes to remember. But really, the most important thing, again, is just to come over to geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy, land on the page, click on the code that you need to use, and lock in that savings right from that very click. And we appreciate those of you that do. Appreciate those that send people over to utilize my codes, and when my codes are shared, I definitely appreciate that as well. Help us keep the lights on and the fuel in the vehicle and all the stuff that takes to take care of business here. So we want to thank GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor of the show and for your ongoing support as a listener of this podcast. All right, just a couple of quick things before we get into the full stack of content. I don't have a lot. Saturday morning, did the new media show with Rob Greenlee. Matter of fact, that's going to be posted tonight. I'm neglectful in getting that show online, so I get that out tonight after the show's posted. But, Saturday about 11 a.m., my son's friends started showing up, and the weather here was, for Hawaii, you know, that's weird to say, but the weather was not great. And so we were trying to decide bowling, movie, or go to the beach, movie. And one of his friends had a baseball game, so they were late. He was late getting here, which we would have probably already went bowling. But the weather kind of cleared up, as it often does here in Hawaii. Rainy one moment, sunny the next. And the kids are like, let's go to the beach. And I'm like, I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, we got to be in the car in like 5 minutes. I know you already have pre-positioned because we'll get down there. They give you guys about an hour and a half before we have to load up to go to the movie. And so we made it down the beach, and they got to, but they forgot their boogie boards. So they had to body surf instead. So they had a good time. Five boys, you know, just running around like crazy. And then they filled my car full of sand, got changed. And we went to see the Star Wars movie Rogue One. And I enjoyed it. You know, a lot of people are talking trash about this movie. It was really good. I enjoyed it. I don't try to get too deep into the plot and all the nuances that some people do. I just went and watched and had a good time. And it was definitely a good piece. And we look forward to the next one. So, you know, one thing, I made a mistake, though. So we have these theaters here that are like, they've got these Lazy Boy type seats. Pretty expensive. They're like $15 or $16 for a ticket. And I was trying to get all of us in there, five teenagers and me, six tickets. And I just found one time and I purchased it. And I, you know, boom, I got it. I was happy I was able to get a slot. And we got there and I had paid for 3D. So I watched the movie in 3D. Big mistake. It was okay. But, you know, I'd have much preferred not to watch it in 3D. The boys had a great time. It was okay, you know, but it was one of those things like, you know, in a rush to try to get tickets booked, which I should have booked them weeks ago. You know, but anyway, we got to see it in 3D and $108 later on my credit card. So I hope they had a good time along with popcorn and everything. That was another $50. I mean, tell you, the movie theater business, I guess they got to pay for those new buildings somehow, but anyway, it was good. But I saw something today, you know, I feel like I had put a post up on Facebook saying I felt like I'd been run through a ringer washer. And those of you, many of you probably don't even know what a ringer washer is. I grew up with one. It's, and you know, many years, actually probably about the time I graduated high school was about the time my mom put in a regular washing machine. But a ringer washer is an open tub. My dad was in construction, so the clothes got really nasty. So the machine she had was like, and it, you put the clothes in, you know, back and forth, it washes. And then when you're ready to rinse, you run it through the wringer into a rinse tub. And then, you know, and I think in that tub is Downy or whatever, but you know, you rinse, get the first run of soap out of it. Meanwhile, you drain the washing machine and you fill it back up with water. And you run the clothes back through again and one last time. And then you run it through the wringer again to get it ready to go in the dryer. So you've got, you know, two rinse cycles and everything works out good. Well, I felt like I'd been run through that wringer a couple of times because I read literally over 500 emails today. And I'm seeing a little cross-eyed because I did go through every email that I got from every press person, every exhibitor, anyone that sent anything to date. And I think I got about 100 today in my inbox alone, which was crazy. But just going through, and I wanted to make sure because, you know, this show at CES has grown so massive that I have no choice but really to plan and decide what I'm going to see and what I'm not going to see and what hall I'm going to be in, what day, and which stuff is going to get skipped. And so, you know, I'm doing the, you know, the counts now on vendors and what hall they're in and where I need to go. And so there's no way I'm going to be able to do more than 100. It's just going to be impossible. Plus anything else that pops up in between. And, you know, I'll be lucky if I come home with 60 or 70 interviews, which I'll be really pleased with. And maybe we'll get more. Who knows? But because I used to do 120, 130 on my own, but I'm not, you know, that 40-year-old dude anymore either. So anyway, I'm looking forward to get through, and then I sent out an email to all those vendors that I basically said, okay, yeah, I'm coming. Here's my information. Now I'm trying to work on the sponsorship stuff to get the event paid for, that'll be the, you know, that'll be the thing to close the rest of the deal. So it's not a priority on the sponsorship. What happens will happen. Again, we're going for a much different reason that I've talked about in the show, is to rekindle relationships on the floor, not in my broadcast studio where I'm being handled by a PR person. So anyway, that is that. And I've already talked way too long on this stuff, but thanks for everyone for being here. Those of you that are on Facebook, hello, Michael, Alberto, hello. Thank you for being on board. Appreciate you tuning in live tonight. And I know there's some folks on YouTube as well, so thanks for being here. Definitely appreciate it. You also have been a little earlier getting the show started, and starting at 7 p.m. Hawaiian Standard Time. Can't count on that being the case all the time, because my son's already talking about flag football starting after the Christmas break. So we'll see what day those practices are and what time I'm able to get home. So anyway, enjoy it while it lasts. All right. Okay, so let me go ahead and get the full stack of tech news up, and we'll go into that. And I saw something today. Jack, you're going to love this. TriCaster Jack, you are going to love this story. And I saw this headline on the NewYorker.com that said, "The Hazards of Going on Autopilot." And there's a picture of a cockpit of a Boeing 787 Dreamliner. In the article, I was thinking, what are they talking about? The hazards of going on autopilot, and it goes into this full blown story about a Continental Connection flight that crashed due to autopilot and automation, and the pilots being a little bit behind the power curve and talking in the cockpit when they weren't supposed to, and a number of things led to this accident, and ultimately it was the pilot who reacted incorrectly to a stall and enhanced the stall, and essentially the airplane fell out of the sky. And it goes into a bunch of other accidents that happened. And I'm reading through this, and I'm like, what's the point here? We know that there has been accidents, but what it really was trying to talk about in deep detail was, and this is the essence, this is the Reader's Digest version of this lengthy New Yorker article. A guy spent about 20 years where he was looking at intelligent system design and looking at how pilots interacted in the cockpit and did things and what was causing some of these accidents. And what they found, they ran a test using a Boeing 747-400 flight simulator, and they confirmed that the degree of automation a pilot relied on during a flight directly impacted how closely he paid attention to his work. What they found it was true is automation proponents argued that pilots spent less time worrying about the minutiae of flying, which is good when they're using more highly automated systems, but they weren't necessarily using this new available mental, you know, they've been freed from having to know all this extra stuff, so their mental capacity wasn't being taxed harder. So what happened was, is they were thrown a bunch of tests, and the pilot's technical skills, notably their ability to scan instruments and operate manual controls, had all remained largely intact. Those were the skills that pilots, industry experts, had been most concerned about. But it seemed that flying an airplane was much like riding a bike. The pilot's ability to make complex cognitive decisions, however, what this gentleman called their manual thinking skills, had suffered a hit. They were less able to visualize their plane's position, to decide what navigational steps should come next, and to diagnose abnormal situations. "The things you do with your hands are good," Kasner told me, "but it's the thing you do with your mind and brain that we really need to practice." So really, and this is after having been, you know, been a back end guy in an airplane and nearly 10,000 hours in P3s alone, and some time in two seater FA-18s and some time in UH-1Ns, and then the FA-18 time I got just as going on hops when I was in Lemoore. I think I've told that story on this show, but the a lot of flying is you feel in your seat of your pants, in your ass. It's just like your car. You know, you get sideways with your vehicle on ice, and you know your butt tells you you're going the wrong way, and you know which way to turn the steering wheel. And it's really not quite that literal, but that's kind of the way it is. You strap an airplane on, right? So there's certain things that you feel with the airplane. But what they have found is a lot of automation in the airplane, basically from the time they rotated and started their climb. A lot of this is automated. They would engage autopilot. The aircraft would climb at the most perfect fuel burning load, get it to cruise, automatically continue automatically adjusting the throttles, changing the, you know, whatever pitch needed to be. All that was done for them. And really, they were there to take off and land. And airplanes are largely flying themselves in between. And so when something happened, then all of a sudden got to take control and got to do something. There was a little bit of loss of those skills. Now, I remember many, many times in flying in P3s that the pilot, and I'm getting to the crux of this thing, and maybe you guys are already on to where I'm going here, but the crux of this was, I've lost my train of thought here, essentially that, I've completely blew my train of thought. So with this more automated procedures, you lost the skills that you had. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So in the P3, the autopilot would often break. And the P3 autopilot was really pretty rudimentary beginning. You could set the altitude and you could descend a little bit and climb, but you still had to trim the airplane. It wasn't perfect, but I could always tell when the autopilot was broke and we were doing like controlled turns and stuff like that where I needed the pilot to be in a certain position, a certain place, and I'd be yelling on ICS on them where the hell they're going and all this stuff. But because they weren't used to mainly driving the airplane, they had it on autopilot. Man, they would complain because they had to work. Made them work, you know, and they always had to be thinking, staying ahead of the airplane, making sure airspeed's good, making sure trim's right, making sure fuel balance, all this stuff, making sure that the, you know, we're not going to stall, you know, all these things that oftentimes the autopilot took care of. So the crux of this is this when we become more reliant on our vehicles to drive us around, some of these skills that we all have. You know, take, for example, the article I talked about on the last show. And if you guys watched that video, you just, you know, I want you to think about what I'm talking about now. And having seen that video from the last show on that Tesla that auto-braked, and I don't know if it auto-steered or not, but that guy was on it, okay? He was, you know, a millisecond later, and it had been, you know, there'd have been metal crunched, right? So if we are going to be relying on vehicles, and this is proof by that Uber car that blew a red light in San Francisco, you know, they're there, they're monitoring, but your hands aren't on the wheels anymore. And to be able to react and do something, you got to be fast. So either we build enough safety into these autopilot systems in the cars to know that we're not paying attention. It's going to assume that we're not. It's going to assume we're looking at our phone. You know, that's the way they're going to have to program these vehicles. Now, active monitoring is impossible to achieve in aviation. But industries in which automation is starting to peek its head into, we still have a opportunity to learn about the problems that occurred in aircraft cockpits and transfer that into the cockpit of our motor vehicles. So, Jack, I'd be curious to hear, and you need to read this article, and being a, you know, airline pilot instructor and stuff. I'm sure this is stuff that you've talked about a lot. But, you know, for me sitting in the back, I could always tell, you know, after that many years, you know, pitch of an engine would change, or you just got become attuned. It was like being at the office and all of a sudden noticing, hearing something strange that shouldn't be there. And so you get attuned to that. But at the same time, I wasn't up front driving. I was sitting in front of my system doing what I was doing. And it kind of over the years played out, because I remember back when I first started flying, everything I did was manual. I had to touch everything, make adjustments, measurements. I was constantly moving to stay ahead of what I did. And literally, I mean, you know, for 10 hours, this, you know, it was switch this knob, turn this switch, turn this down, turn this up, just to make sure I was right, make an adjustment. And then as automation kicked in, some of that stuff got automated. I didn't have to do all that touching. I just had to do a couple of different things. And what really happened at that point was I kind of lost some of those touch skills that I become so accustomed to earlier. So are we going to be better, worse drivers? Some people probably, the car will drive better than them anyway. You know, at least here in Hawaii, that's the case. I'm sure you've gotten behind a few drivers before you want to smash your head against the wall because they're clueless. But automation may not always be better, but it'd be curious to see how we do. And I think with vehicles talking to each other all the time, it's going to help. So anyway, that is, I just thought it was fascinating. And to cross all this studies about automation in the cockpit as it applied to you know, automation in driving cars. And I'm going to be definitely looking at the automation area at CES to look at what's going on with what tech they're going to be showing off for, you know, autonomous vehicles. So actually, I was talking with Marl Anderson this morning. I was on his radio program in Nebraska, I think, where it was like 13 degrees and we were joking about the temperature difference, but we were talking about the autonomous car stuff that's going to happen in CS, and he's excited about that too. So if you're not subscribed to Marlo's show, The Tech Ranch, I'll put a link up to it in the show notes tonight. He's a great guy, and he's got a different spin on things when it comes to tech. And you know, some of the stuff him and I covered together, but there's enough deltas there that you may find some value and an additional show. And he's, of course, part of the Tech Podcast Network. For many, switching topics here, for many, many, many months, and actually over several years, we talked about the things and the deceptions, in my opinion, that was happening with the Prenda Law Firm. These two schemers, in my opinion, have been indicted by the feds in an alleged $6 million adult video trolling extortion scheme. The attorneys who ran the firm called Prenda Law would use shell companies to buy up copyrights for adult movies, then upload those movies to file sharing websites such as Pirate Bay to refresh your memory, where they would monitor who downloaded them. In many cases, the attorney would send threatening cease and desist letters to users who downloaded the films, accusing them of copyright infringement and offering to settle cases for about $4,000. When the operation came to light in 2013, U.S. Judge District Otis Wright said the attorneys had defrauded the court and called Prenda an adult. Well, he actually called it a porno trolling collective. And what they would do is anyone that fought back, they would basically not fight them. They would basically dismiss the claim. But this past Friday, federal prosecutors unsealed an 18-count indictment charging Hansmeier and Steele, remember that name, with conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud, conspiracy to commit and subpern perjury, and other charges. Prosecutors alleged the men netted over $6 million between 2011 and 2014 by threatening fraudulent copyright lawsuits against hundreds of unwitting victims. And the court is basically saying abusing one's position as a licensed attorney, using the courts and legal process to file false and abusive corporate claims that threaten individuals and encourage fraudulent settlements is wrong and will not be tolerated, Assistant U.S. Attorney General Caldwell said in a statement. We will act to protect the integrity of judicial proceedings against attorneys and others who would seek to use them as a mechanism for their own illegal gains. This is finally, these two guys are going to have their day in court. And there's such a, oh my gosh, these guys are so done. There's so much evidence on what they did and the minutiae and the motions and the stuff that they did through third parties. And it is, it's going to be interesting. And I'm hopeful a conviction and some jail time for these two guys, because they in my opinion were the worst of the worst. So we will see where this goes. And here's the thing: they were basically saying, "You pay up, or we're gonna tell your wife you were looking at this video, or pay up, or we're gonna talk on social media about you watching this video." So they're using those kinds of tactics, according to this article over in the Washington Post. So, bada bing, bada boom, a story that we've talked about for many, many years, and individuals, they're going to get their day. And I could not be more pleased with this announcement. I really couldn't. Facebook today has announced Messenger now lets you video chat with up to 50 people. Now, I don't know how you're going to video chat with 50 people at once, but the app is now capable of forming group video calls. For the first 6 participants, the app will stream everyone's camera feed to one another. After 6, Messenger will display only the dominant speaker's feed. That makes Messenger video chat feature one of the most robust options in the industry, seeing how Google Hangouts and Microsoft Skype have 10-person limits on their consumer products. The addition of video chat follows an April update. The first added group calling to Messenger prior to that add-on Facebook app was only capable of making one-to-one audio calls. So this is big. Big. 650. I tell you, if nothing else, Facebook put a squash to making anyone else have any claim to fame. So anyway, that's available on Messenger. Of course, with all these leaks going on, specifically security leaks, we've heard about Yahoo and having more accounts being hacked. Apparently, the folks over at Leaked Source have another 100 million or so accounts from another Chinese hacking group that is have yet to announce the hack. But Leaked Source is a service, and this is probably smart for businesses too, that sends email notifications about new breaches and offers a database of information stolen hacks. Its basic service, the ability to sign up for email notifications and search the database, are free, but users can pay to access more advanced search functionality. Leaked Source also provides a paid tool for businesses so that they can notify users who have been affected by a breach. The project started in late 2015 with just days to go in 2016. The group that runs Leaked Source is planning to release another 100 million more records, again from a Chinese mega site. This will bring their total number of compromised accounts that they have a record of to, like, what did they say, a trillion? No, 3 billion. 3 billion hacked accounts. So, I think we all can admit that it gets tiring to hear about all these breaches. But oftentimes you may not hear. You may miss the news, and your account may be one that was affected. So anyway, I'll have the link up in the show notes on this. I wasn't familiar with this site. Maybe we talked about it once before, but definitely something to stay abreast of, all right? Okay, I know that the hearing impaired really rely on using TTY and stuff like that with through telephone services to communicate. The internet obviously has changed things a lot. They are able to message and so forth, and a lot of them have done a lot of additional used a lot of additional tools, but the FCC today has unanimously adopted rules to facilitate the transition from the outdated analog teletype devices to a new internet-based real-time text messaging standard, or called RTT, and it's compatible with the latest smartphones. So essentially what this will allow is the will allow an operator to basically talk to some, you know, someone that is not hearing impaired, and then real time text the information to the hearing impaired person's cell phone, and a back and forth conversation can happen for someone that's trying to call them. This isn't just a fancy new version of text messaging either. Who represented telecommunications for the deaf and hard of hearing during the FCC process. This is closer to the equivalent of communications that most hearing consumers take for granted. This is a way for deaf or hard of hearing consumers to communicate in ways that haven't been available before. And again, for years, most of these folks have been relied on a TTY device, which are, you know, pretty much like a typewriter. And they also can be connected to devices that produce a braille display. So, you know, the origin of TTY goes back to the 1960s. So, oh, we're getting an ad on the, isn't that lovely? I'm not even watching Paige. You guys are getting an advertisement on the show for the Art of Shaving. No, we're not. They are not a sponsor of this show. But, so this is fantastic. So if you have someone in your family who is deaf or hearing impaired, you're going to want to turn them on to this. I'm sure maybe they probably are way ahead of you and may know it already anyway. But link will be up in the show notes for you to check this out tonight, okay? Hey, Paul, welcome to the show. Yeah, I want a self-driving golf cart as well. Hey, Tim Cook sent a letter to the employees at Apple today. One thing he did say was a question had been asked why he had met with President-elect Trump last week, and basically says it's better to be part of the conversation than be on the sidelines. But for those of you that are use a desktop, be assured that Tim Cook is saying that the Mac desktops are very important. He says, the desktop is very strategic for us. It's unique compared to the notebook because you can pack a lot more performance in a desktop. Large screens, most memory and storage, a greater variety of I.O. and fast performance. So there are many different reasons why desktops are really important, in some cases critical to people. The current generation iMac is the best desktop we've ever made. Its beautiful Retina 5K display is the best display in the world. Some folks in the media raise questions about whether we've committed to desktops. If there's any doubt about that, let me be very clear. We have great desktops in our roadmap. Nobody should worry about that. So we will see where this goes. They definitely blew it on the Mac Pro side. So I don't know. I guess I'll take all the ports away on the desktop version too, just to be jerks. I fully expect them to do that, but. Anyway, that's the message from Tim Cook. Airbnb. I've never really thought that I could ever let somebody just come in and stay in my house when I'm not here or on travel. It to me, and I know some people do it as a business. They buy houses and that's they put them up on Airbnb. A lot of that happens here in Hawaii. Actually, for any of you coming to Hawaii, the best way to score a relatively inexpensive place to stay is to watch Craigslist. People are always selling their timeshares, and you can get it at great price, usually at great resorts. So keep an eye on Craigslist for you know, people that are basically willing to let their timeshare go for a week for really low money. So definitely, if you're thinking about a trip to Hawaii, that's where you can save on some of the hotel fare cost. But anyway, Airbnb is also here, and people do it, even though they're, you know, there's laws against some of the rental types. But in New York, it's gotten pretty big. The government is really looking to target anyone who leases their apartment for less than 30 days. So in New York, most of the Airbnb hosts who spoke at a hearing urged the mayor's office to exempt individual hosts from being subjected to this law. A gentleman by the name of Joe Williams, a host from Harlem who listed her property on Airbnb after her tenants broke their lease, said that the law should target illegal commercial hotel operators and not the thousands of hosts who rely on Airbnb as an economic lifeline. So they don't want, you know, you can, have you been to Manhattan? You seen how much it costs to stay in a hotel in Manhattan? Holy cow. I got to go in July. I was already looking at prices in July in Manhattan. It's like $400 a night. It's crazy. So Airbnb makes perfect sense because you can walk, if you're anywhere in Manhattan, you can walk out of an apartment building and be on the street and be in a Uber in 3 minutes, you know, and really get almost anywhere in the city very, very quickly. You know, you really don't need to stay in a hotel because oftentimes hotels in Manhattan are stuck in and amongst residential neighborhoods anyway. But those who violate the law would be fined $1,000, $5,000 for the second time and $7,500 for the third and further on violations. So, you know, they're being very aggressive here on people renting their homes in Airbnbs. The proposed rule gave no indication whether New York City will distinguish individual hosts from commercial operators effectively running hotels illegally through the Airbnb platform. Helen Rosenthal, New York council member, said in her testimony that the focus of the law should be on the commercial illegal hotel operators, those who either are building owners or who warehouse empty apartments, or individuals who lease multiple apartments in many buildings to rent them out on Airbnb. So anyway, that's the dealio. And Airbnb is being threatened in many of these big cities because the cities just don't like people renting a room or renting their house to a stranger. Again, I think it's kind of weird. I know some people rely on it because, let's say, in Manhattan especially, people stay Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They go upstate or, you know, to a second home, because many of these folks have second homes in the country. So their apartments stay empty all weekend. So they use Airbnb to, you know, supplement their rent. You know, and some of these places are, you know, people are renting apartments that's no bigger than this studio and getting, you know, paying huge money for it. So I saw one person that had a room literally as big as this, paying like $2,000, and it really wasn't even a great part of Manhattan. So it's pretty crazy, but that's what happens when you live in the big city. You know, of course, a lot of thing in the news about hacking. And you know, I contend it's still been some kid in Jersey that has done all this hacking. You know, the FBI and CIA obviously say different, say the Russians were, you know, responsible. But here's something that, you know, people fail to realize. There's an article today in Engadget talking about a Nigerian man is charged in hacking of 108 LA County employee email accounts. So, you know, it may not quite rival last week's revelation that up to 1 billion Yahoo accounts had been hacked in 2013. But a Nigerian national is basically facing some jail time. He hasn't been arrested, though, and authorities aren't sure whether he's still in the United States or searching for possible accomplices. And I don't know what he did with these accounts, okay? It's obvious he didn't publish their email online. But if you think about it, and it's something I've been thinking about, too, that even though these accounts were hacked, okay, let's think about the past 6 months and all the WikiLeaks stuff and everything that was announced, Julian Assange and everything he did, of course, they're saying it's all backed by the, you know, the Russian state-sponsored hacking. What was revealed in those emails was still written by those people. And the revelations that were put forth were things that I think astounded many. I'm sure that if the Republicans' email had been released, there would be equal number of astounding things that would have been in there that would have obviously made headline news. No doubt, you know, people put stuff in email that they think is absolutely unequivocally secure. So unless you're running encryption on your email and you're doing point to point where you're emailing someone and they have the key to unlock, it's a pretty good bet that your email if your account was hacked and your password compromised. You know, it's essentially, you know, unencrypted unless you're encrypting it before you send it. So what really is the thing here, I'm just trying to make a point, is that this guy got access to 108 LA County employees' emails, whatever way he did it, I don't care. You know, there's phishing and all variety of different ways to do that. But next time you're writing an email, and for business, sometimes you're doing strategic stuff and you're talking about competitors, you know, and that to be expected. But, you know, stick to business. Keep the emotion and keep, you know, keep some of the stuff that get people in trouble, you know, if it made headline news, out of your emails. You know, I can get quite animated at times. And I'm sure if my emails were all publicly made available, there would probably be a few red in the face emails in there. So I think we all have to just be aware of what we're sending. And, you know, in the, here's the deal. This is not a phone, but, you know, if it's something that you want to vent on, pick up the phone and vent. You know, do it over the phone. Don't do it over email. So, anyway, that's just, you know, I'm not here to talk politics. I'm just making us all think, you know, what we put in our email and be aware of it, okay? Imagine that you are a police officer, you have retired, and you are pulled over by a police officer. He said, hey, this car's on our hot sheet, meaning it's been flagged in a database that says you may have been involved in some sort of crime. Well, this retired police officer happened to be driving in an area where there was some motorcycle gang activity going on, and that apparently that was under surveillance, and that vehicle's data was put in a database as if it may have been involved with the activity. When he got pulled over, and this was in his database, he was given a pretty hard time. And he canvassed senior police officers about it, and the professional standards chief inspector confirmed that the constable had generated an entity link containing unconfirmed information, but said there was no evidence to suggest any malicious intent had been involved in its creation. But some officer entered that this guy, you know, basically, it was an intelligence rating inside a police database that said that this guy was an A1, in other words, top list potential gang member. I didn't even know this kind of stuff existed, but apparently, if you're driving around a neighborhood and there's some sort of activity going on and the police officer has any, or the surveillance team has any indication that you might be involved, you might just end up in a database someplace and you'll never know it. Imagine being pulled out of your car and stripped down by a gang task force to take pictures of any tattoos or anything like that, or be brought in for questioning for something that you're not even involved in. This is information that's being stored about people that we don't even know about. Again, law enforcement databases, and usually not accessible by Freedom of Information Act and that type of stuff, because there are often active cases being associated with the information that's within those. So it makes you go, wow, really, you know, it's really pretty crazy. So anyone have any run-in with someone like that, or have something happen to them where you ended up in some list? A little more exciting news. Use of cell phone spying technology has become widespread among U.S. law enforcement agencies, according to the folks at PC World. And apparently, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform is concerned about this. They're saying, absent proper oversight and safeguards, the domestic use of these types of collection devices may well infringe upon the constitutional right of citizens to be from unreasonable search and seizure. The report focuses on the privacy concerns with the controversial surveillance device, which can intercept According to the PC World, phone location along with calls, SMS, text message, and websites visited. And they're saying often this is done with the little, with no warrants being issued. So very interesting article on PC World, and Congress may be looking at this. So we talked a little bit about solar on the last show, and actually, as I was reading today, in Vegas at CES, there's going to be a whole area dedicated to solar. And it turns out that the more reports are coming in that because the cost of solar is going down, specific photovoltaic panels, that the number one growth rate for energy in the United States and many countries around the world this year was being supplied by solar power. So, you know, we kind of talked about this before, but more incidental coverage on that, about that happening. Like to see the solar panels get really cheap. Then we got to figure out a way to get Elon Musk get his batteries bought at a price that can be affordable, and really flip the bird towards the utilities and completely disconnect from the grid. And I know there's a number of you that listen to the show that are, you know, doing that by adding 4 or 5 panels a year and getting more, you know, getting more storage, battery storage, and that kind of stuff. So more power to you. Are you doing? If you're doing that, love to hear your story and where you're at on becoming energy, being able to go off the grid from an energy standpoint. There's a great article by Mark Zuckerberg, and it was all over the headlines today, talking about an artificial intelligence system that he built for his house. It's called Building Jarvis. And he is basically a simple AI to run his home. And he's got it tied to lights, thermostat, doors, his Sonos speakers, which I love Sonos, Spotify cameras, his toaster. He even has a t-shirt cannon that he built. A Creston is a telescope. It's tied to a messenger bot, iOS voice app, door camera. It utilizes face recognition, speech recognition, and language processing. And it goes into what he has done to connect his home. And of course, Mark is a coder, so he spent about 150 hours writing this code, and I'm hoping he's going to open source it. But basically, he's trying to automate a lot of stuff going on in his house. And if anybody can do this and figure this out, how to make it work really well, Mark could. But he says, as the CEO of Facebook, I don't get much time to write code in our internal environment. I've never stopped coding. But these days, I mostly build personal projects like Jarvis. I expected I'd learn about the state of AI this year, but I didn't realize I would also learn so much about what it's like to be an engineer at Facebook, and it's impressive. So it goes into, you know, what he's done and where he's going. So I think this is big. I'd like to see more projects like this getting off the ground and being able to automate our homes and have this stuff tied in so it's secure. And we can be assured that our internal computer processor lets us and only us in the door, and you know, the variety of other things that are going on. But very, very cool. I'll have the article up in the show notes. All of you should go through and read this. I think you get a little bit of a insight into what's coming and what's possible for our homes. Well, TechDirt, gotta love these guys. They always come up with the cool stuff. There's an article about a basically, the Fourth District Appeals affirmed a lower court's ruling that found that a police chief's social media policy violated the First Amendment. And this is basically an employer saying, hey, this is our policy on tweeting, and you can't say anything bad about the department, and a whole bunch of things that essentially he could not do. And a couple of people got fired because of stuff they said on social media, and this court case is basically affirm that what he set in place was not allowed. So if your employer is trying to suppress your commentary on social media about the company you work for, while it's probably not advisable to complain about your boss without talking to your boss, in this instance, they can't stop you. So for those of you that are running into any of this type of situation, that the work that you, where you work, it might be a good opportunity for you just to kind of share this article or print it out and put it on the, you know, whichever way you can get the message across that maybe the boss needs to change his policy and what he's doing might not be legal. Because I know some people who are suppressed about what they can and can't say about their jobs. Great YouTube video about a holiday artichoke dip that went horribly wrong on air. Apparently, a lady substituted some ingredients in her once wonderful artichoke dip that made all the television hosts gag on a Seattle-based news television show in the morning. It's pretty good to watch these guys almost throw up on TV. You would have thought she would have tested that. Maybe she did. Maybe she brought this very nasty dessert into work just to get a reaction. Now, that's something to think about. You guys having a holiday party where it's a potluck? You know, make something nasty. Make it, make it legal so it doesn't have anything in it that would get anybody hurt. But maybe sneak in a disgusting dessert. but she definitely got a reaction on TV. So, she's claiming innocence, but makes you go, yes, it is. How many of you like the first movie with John Wick? John Wick 2 is coming. There's an awesome trailer. Essentially, everyone in the world is trying to kill him. And we'll be able to watch this upcoming movie, I believe, in February, early February. This will be in a movie theater. So if you like John Wick 2 is coming. The official trailer is out. As well, Blade Runner 2049 footage is available. So I have that link up in the show notes as well. The intro to that, a minute 45 movie prepper, is online. Hey, there's an article over on Jalopnik, Jalopnik, that's really trying to downplay automated car driving. It says, don't believe the hype about a driverless society being just a few years away. I think this guy's wrong. We understand that, before it hits mainstream, a lot of people are going to have to buy cars there's going to be a lot of cars bought by rich people to bring the price down for average people to afford a driverless vehicle. But I'm looking at driverless vehicles as being an investment in time. How much time do I get back? What is that worth in dollars? You know, that's the kind of the way I'm looking at it going forward. But with 256 million cars on the road in the United States, it'll be 20 years at least before all of those have been completely replaced. And only a percentage of those, and even in the next 10 years, are going to be replaced with vehicles that are self-driving. But I think we're going to make rapid advancements. I think vehicles are going to be talking to each other. I think there's going to be a lot of things going on. Relatively quickly, people are just going to demand it. You know, we've all seen what has happened with the situation with Tesla. We're all jealous of, the ability of Tesla drivers to do what they do. You know, going back to the autopilot thing, that might be a consequence of it. We may all be unable to control our vehicles when we need to. But these guys are pretty negative. I think we're going to see autonomous happen a lot faster in commercial because they've got the money to be able to do it on big trucks. And I think vehicles will follow. But I'm still excited that when I'm, let's say, 70, I don't have to rely on my kids to drive, or 80. I don't have to rely on my kids to drive me around if I make it that far. So many old people are driving and getting lost, get in a vehicle and, take you somewhere, or a service that will do that. That's the way it's going to be. All right. Physicists have learned how to measure antimatter and they are really excited. Measuring antimatter is obviously very tricky because, antimatter is destroyed the moment it comes contact with the regular matter. So they did some pretty cool stuff at CERN and were able to actually measure it. They're a little bit confused how come everything completely worked, but they've released it and scientists have went a little bit gaga on this. As they expected, antimatter is just the opposite. It's a negative of actual matter. So anyway, the anti-hydrogen behaves much like regular hydrogen, just with the reverse charge. So anyway, a link will be up in the show notes on that for those of you that are the science types. Okay. Kick? Any of you using Kick? Kick has now added group video calls as well. So that was added as part of the part of their update. So just keep you advised on that. Had to laugh. Dave Weiner over at scripting.com. I don't reference Dave's stuff too much anymore because a lot of the stuff he writes is just kind of negative. But every year he announces Blogger of the Year, and you're never going to believe he is not a Trump fan at all. I mean, the polar opposite to be exact. And he announced that Trump was a Blogger of the Year, at least one of his picks. And basically saying, well, I don't like the guy. You have to admire with what he has done in controlling the media and the message and using Twitter and all this other stuff that's going on. So he's not all positive, but he's definitely been very effective doing it. So I just had a laugh. Now, he did recommend a couple other people as well. Josh Marshall at TPM, which is talkingpointsmemo.com, and talking about their column over there. But anyway, that just kind of came as a surprise to me. There's an article I'd love to share with you folks. But I can't because it definitely crosses the line on content rating here. But I find it absolutely fascinating. Talks about a robot and what's forthcoming, and has to do with the state of the human race when robots take over some duties. So I'll have the link. Not in the show notes, but it was an article that was posted on Gizmodo. I'll let you guys kind of go through and look. Maybe you'll find it yourself. But anyway, it's a little bit of a fascinating article, and it makes you go, Also on Deadspin.com talks about the worst tweets of 2016, and I'm reading through these, and I'm like, I don't get it. Many of these, he calls these the worst tweets of 2016, and I'm just, some of the stuff I don't fully understand. You know, there's a few in here you kind of go, but maybe I'm not, I don't know. I'll have the link up in the show notes. I'll let you guys decide. You guys go through the list. Do you think those were the worst tweets of 2016? Again, it's the concourse.deadspin.com. I'll have that up in the show notes. But sometimes these lists don't make a lot of sense. But this guy's serious. He's like, these people should be ashamed of themselves. I'm just like, really? In big money news, the battle for satellite-powered internet is heating. Weeks after Tesla asked the United States government permission to launch a service powered by thousands of satellites above the Earth, rival Project OneWeb has raised $1.2 billion in new funding to get things rolling as soon as 2019. They had an influx of cash from a bevy of investors that included Airbus, Qualcomm, Virgin, Boeing, and Coca-Cola. The new financing is led by Japan SoftBank, which is cutting a $1 billion check for the company as well. So SoftBank's rolling some money, man. And it's not only that, they're talking about jobs here in the U.S. because of their acquisition. Cool stuff. Hey, there's a molten jet stream at the core of the Earth. A band of molten iron is churning slowly deep inside Earth, much in the same way as a jet stream, a new study finds. And it moves about 25 miles a year, so it's not moving as fast as the normal jet stream, but it does affect the magnetic, magnetic, I don't want to say rings, that really isn't the magnetic field around the Earth and how it shifts. So I'll have the link up in the show notes on that. Also, Rocket Lab declares Electron ready for use. So this is a New Zealand startup that is ready to begin launch test flights early next year. And they're just waiting on licensing not only from New Zealand, but the United States. So maybe another commercial carrier is going to be available. And this one's launching out of New Zealand, out of the Southern Hemisphere. The Chevy Bolt, a very interesting write-up by the folks at Bloomberg. And it talks about being an ugly car, but with brilliant financial engineering, talking about GM beats Tesla to the punch and having a 30K, 200-mile vehicle. So I'll have that link up in the show notes for you to check out. Lots of positive things to say about this vehicle, but it also shows where GM cut corners to save money. Here's a couple of things they did not really skimp on. The seats. They said they put a lot of time and effort into the seats to make sure the ride was comfortable. And then some of the amenities of, the paneling and that kind of stuff isn't as nice, and it had to be able to keep the price down below or at $30,000 as an industry level for our 200-mile EV. So link goes up in the show notes on that as well. How am I doing for time? I'm doing okay. If you live in New York City, you can now pay for your parking with your phone. I wonder if they issue a ticket to your phone as well and let you pay for it. The most popular programming language is based on job search engines and more. And I'm a little shocked about this. Number one, Java. 2, C. Number 3, Python. Number 4, C++. 5, JavaScript. Number 6, CPound. Number 7, PHP. That blows me away. Considering it's 7th on the list. It's a pain to hire PHP devs. Number 8, Swift. Number 9, Objective-C. And number 10, R. So these are the languages that seem to group themselves into primary, secondary, and third language tiers. So PHP was in the second tier, but it just blows me away that Java right there at number 1 and JavaScript at number 5. I guess that's still pretty viable. Hey, South Korea, you got to give them kudos. The Korean Superconducting Tomahawk Advanced Research Reactor was able to sustain the high-performance plasma reaction for 70 seconds. And this is a nuclear fusion reactor. The K-STAR team reached a plasma state using a completely non-inductive mode and a high-power natural beam. So this is a 2015, the record was 55 seconds. 2016, it went to 70 as compared to 2010 when they could only hold it for 4. So huge advancements here. Huge potential. If someone figures this out, the companies are going to be rich beyond belief. It will change everything. If you have a Tesla and you're using the superchargers, if you stay on the charger longer than your car being charged, Tesla's going to charge you 40 cents a minute for being on the charger when you're charged. You got a 5-minute window to get your vehicle off. So that's something new. Tesla's sick of people just leaving their car, full charge car, on the charger bar and not letting, because there's a lot of Teslas, people need to charge. And when they can't, then Tesla's going to start whacking you at $24 an hour for leaving your car on the charger when it's fully charged. Smart. It happens a lot here. And my wife's got a Nissan Leaf, and I told her, you're on a high power charger. I said, you watch your app, make sure you're back to the car when the car's about charged, unhook and move, because Leaf owners are the biggest abusers of just leaving their cars hooked up, charging and fully charged, and not taking their cars off the charger. They're off shopping somewhere. I see it all the time. So I tell her, don't be that person. So I'm sure it went in one ear and right out the other. Samsung is making claims that its sleek new laptops is going to show off at CES, weighing in at just 1.8 pounds. Okay. Don't know if they've got an i5 or an i7. I assume these are probably low power machines. We'll see. But if they can get an i7 machine running at 1.8 pounds with some serious performance, I'm very interested. But these are probably be low end machines, probably compatible to some of the low end MacBooks, Mac Air, something like that. So we'll see when we get to CES. But at least that's the announcement by Samsung today. All right, that's going to wrap me up for tech content. And let me go ahead and see if we had any email come in. Do you guys like how I spliced in the audio comment last week? Nothing new on email. So geeknews@gmail.com is the place to send me email. If you've got comments on today's show. It's been my absolute pleasure to bring you the show. I must mention, I am my wife and I, and my wife doesn't like cats. We are cat-sitting my daughter's cat, and her name is May. And my sister never trained the cat to come to the kitty, kitty, kitty call, So instead, you have to go may call. It's kind of weird. So I've got a cat here that is, for the past about 48 hours, is severely pissed off that she has been left here. And I was talking a little bit about Facebook, you know, using catnip, bringing out tuna, putting a little bit of milk in a cup. None of that got that cat to basically quit pouting. And when my wife came in the house today, it must have been the woman's voice, because out she came, out she trotted. And I was just like, oh, you're going to come out now after hissing and trying to scratch me? So anyway, long story short, the cat is, look like they're making friends. She's here for 3 weeks. So by the time my daughter gets back, then the cat will probably not want to go home. But I'm just hoping the cat will get to the point where I like cats. hope the cat will get to the point where it'll sit on my lap and at least let me pet it once without getting scratched. Time will tell. But anyway, trials and tribulations with a babysitting a little kitty cat about a year and a half old. So she's still got a little too much kitten in her, I think. But she was upset, angry. You could just see, you come here and she goes, ah! You know, and I was like, okay, I'll leave you alone till you get over it. But anyway, you guys didn't need to hear that. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the Ohana. And I hope everyone's preparing for Christmas. I'll be back with you. Thursday show is going to be a little different. I'm going to do, we got a party Thursday night. So I will be on early. I don't know how early. Maybe 2 o'clock or something like that. I'll shoot for 2. 2 p.m. Hawaiian, that'll be 4 Eastern or even 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that's the time I'll shoot for. Watch Twitter. I'll make an announcement by the time I go live. Those of you on the East Coast that never get to watch the show, you can come on and hang out with us for an hour. Everyone that's been in the on Facebook, Brad, Paul, Michael, Alberto, everyone that's been on, thanks for being here. And the folks on YouTube as well, thanks for tuning in tonight. Again, geeknews@gmail.com is email to send your comments. Stay subscribed. Think about supporting the show as we prepare for CES coverage in Vegas at geeknewscenter.com/insider. Everyone take care. We'll see you next time. Aloha.